this.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
So I'll probably hate it.
Everybody, welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you on a Thursday prior to Patriots-Eagles here again on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We're getting you game ready. We got Maz and Murray in our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. I'm coming to you on location, one of these backyard shows. So if you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, you can see it. If you're listening, you may not be able to even tell. Billy and the folks back in the control room, I got a little bit of an echo situation going on here, so maybe there's something you could do with that. Help me out. But in the meantime, Maz, how you doing, kid?
Good. I'm hoping they make the echo worse.
it's pretty bad, Billy, so if you could try and figure that out, it would help me out. But I want to start, Maz, with a corny, formulaic sports radio question that I first introduced yesterday, but I just want to do it again because I think it's going to put you in a spot, which I like.
Okay, no problem. I'm into corny and formulaic. Go.
Okay. So this is just a playoff of that stupid thing. You know, who do you think is going to win the next championship in Boston? I didn't want to open it up to all that. I want to ask you about your Boston Red Sox and your New England Patriots.
Yeah.
If you had to put down money on one of those two teams to win a championship, which would it be?
Okay. So can I pick neither?
No.
Can I pick the Celtics?
Nope.
So I got to pick one of those two? That's the rule?
Yes, that's right. You have to pick one.
Red Sox.
Ha, ha, ha.
I picked the Red Sox.
You hear
first.
That, everybody? Oh, my God. How much did that pain you?
That didn't pain me at all, actually. Because you know what? This really comes down to two things, or one of two things, rather. You're either picking someone on past performance, or you're picking on someone where you think they're going. Okay? It's really one of those two. To me, it's about what's happened in the past, what you've accomplished in the past, and whether or not that alone, you know, is some sort of precedent or predictor of the future, or whether which way a team is trending. I'm more of a believer in the team is trending thing. I do. Now, I have my doubts about the Red Sox, but I feel like they're going up, and I feel like the Patriots are going down, so I would pick the Red Sox.
Okay, beyond just the trend line. You think the Red Sox are less flawed than the Patriots? Can we put it that way? Can we say that? That you feel the Red Sox are less flawed than the Patriots?
Relative to their respective sport, yeah.
What does that mean?
I mean, the Red Sox, relative to their field and their sport, are more, you know, have more bases covered than the Patriots do, yes. Yeah, the answer is yes. The only real issue I see with the Red Sox is one. It's a good size one, but it's in the bullpen. With the Patriots, I see a bunch of them. And so, yes, I think that the Red Sox are a more complete team right now than the Patriots are, yes.
Okay. What you saw last night with your baseball team and what you're going to see tonight with your football team. Just start with the Red Sox losing last night in Philly. Does that, what you saw there last night, reinforce your doubts about the Red Sox? And again, Billy, I'm still getting this echo. But again, last night reinforces your concerns.
So, look, that game, I'm not going to put too much stock in one night. To me, the bullpen thing with the Red Sox has been there all year long. So, I think what we learned last night is that Drew Pomeranz is a bum. That's what I think we learned. And I have very little faith in Pomeranz's ability to enter that bullpen and be some sort of impact guy. Now, look, the velocity on Pomeranz's fastball went up a tick last night. Not a lot, but a little. I think he hit 92 in that seventh inning. Right before he allowed the double to Ramos. So, you know, that's a little bit better than what it was. He'd been hovering around, you know, 89, 90, really much of the year. But it's still not good enough. It's nowhere near good enough. Two years ago when he pitched in the postseason, he was throwing 96. I think he even hit 97. So the way you got to look at that is he's lost 5 miles an hour off his fastball. And with him, I think that's huge. Because, and you know what, they mentioned this during the broadcast last night. When Ramos came up in that at bat in the seventh, he just sat on the curveball because he knew Pomeranz couldn't get the fastball by him. So he just sat there and looked curve first, and then if he had to foul off a fastball, he fouled it off. So I have no hope that Pomeranz is going to be the guy. I still think there's a chance they could find it.
I mean, it's still worth throwing him out there, I think.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah, sure.
So I have no problem with him putting him in that situation last night. And Cora said specifically, I wanted to see him in a leverage situation. So they should do that. And I'm not even ruling out them trying it again because they don't need the games, right? The loss doesn't bother you.
No.
It shouldn't.
Yeah, no. The loss doesn't bother me at all, please. I mean, there's still 50 games over. The Yankees lost. Like, and not that you should even really be watching that at this stage anyway. So it's not the loss. I mean, they're not going to win every one. You know, even a 700 team is going to lose 3 games out of 10. So let's not get stupid about it. Like, they lost a game, and they lost to a pretty good team in their ballpark. Not the end of the world. I'm not sweating that part of it. But I do look at the Pomeranz thing, and I say, not good enough. I mean, the stuff wasn't good enough. That's what the takeaway was for me. Now, would I try it again? Sure. What do you get to lose? I mean, keep going. But do I feel like he's the answer? No, I don't. And I don't know where the answer is. Maybe one of the guys they have gets hot. Maybe they pick up someone in a waiver deal that we're not expecting, though I doubt it. Maybe Price or Eovaldi ends up in the bullpen and he becomes the guy. That could happen too. But all I'm telling you is, if you were asking me to put odds on those things, Drew Pomeranz is the longest of long shots. To me, I have zero faith that he can do it.
Okay, folks, plenty of baseball today, as much as you would like. Billy, you can open the phones at 617-779-0985. Tonight on the Patriots, is there anything they can show you that will help allay some of your fears?
Yes, absolutely. Look, I mean, to me, it starts with Brady. It starts with, the receiving core. Like, you know, even with Edelman, I would like to see it again. You know, it's been a year. I would like to see it again. I would like to see how it looks, how Edelman looked with Brady, all of it. I mean, I even if it's not Edelman, whatever, like whoever the receivers are, I want to see how the whole thing sort of looks and feels. And I want to see the defensive side of the ball too. And I'm not saying these are any final judgments or anything of the like, but I do. I want to see what they look like. Yes. I mean, to me, that first one, what could you realistically tell from that game? There wasn't a ton there. And we all know the thing, whole thing spins around Brady. So I want to see, you know, I want to see what it looks like with Brady on the field.
Yeah, to me, it's not just that. I mean, I expect him to look good. I think, you know, I believe he's gotten off to a slow start. I think all the stuff that's been written and said about those first couple weeks of practice were true. So I'm not telling you that he's right there, but I'm more thinking about some other things. And you know, one of them is left tackle, and these reports about Trent Brown, which we'll get into today. A couple of guys on defense, Maz. I mean, that Juwan Bentley kid, he's an important guy. They have no athleticism at linebacker. They have no one who can run and cover in the passing game. And if he's the guy, they sorely need a guy like that. So, can he back that up from the week before? And maybe some of these young pass rushers getting after it. So, those individual guys I really want to see as much as anything.
Yeah, to me, you can't have enough questions about the defense as a whole. I'll go right across the board there. I mean, there are very few guys on that defense that I look at and I say I'm totally sold on. So I believe in McCourty. I believe in Hightower when he's on the field. I have, you know, I still want to, and I'm not going to get this answer tonight, I still want to see Gilmore. Like, I know Gilmore played really well at the end of the year last year, but the reality is that it felt to me like by that stage, they were pretty much just letting him play man-to-man, and that was the end of it. And look, I'm not telling you that that's bad, because worst case, you can always do that. But the problems with him were coming earlier in the year when they were playing some sort of combination coverages and more complex schemes and coverages. So they can they still do that now, or can they not? Because if it's just going to be, well, put him on someone and the rest of the guys will figure it out, that's fine. I mean, I'm not telling you it's the worst case scenario, but Belichick likes to mix it up. He likes to change it week to week, depending on what the opponent is. What if you go against a team that doesn't have a clear number one receiver like Philly, and they can go to a million different guys, and maybe you're more suited playing a zone? I don't know. I'm not totally convinced on Gilmore yet. I'm not.
Okay. But back to our big question, and that is, as much Red Sox hating as you have done this year, and doubting, and undermining, and Billy, the echo is all set, thank you. All the undermining you did of the Red Sox, you still think they have a better chance to win a championship than the Patriots, which means you think the Patriots are deeply flawed. Where? How? Tell me.
Okay, again, right now the receiving core is a mess, although I do feel like ultimately they have enough there. Their linebacking core blows. I don't know what they have at left corner. I'm still not convinced that Trent Brown is the next coming of the game's great next left tackle, you know, Anthony Munoz or whoever else. Like, honestly, I worry about the crack between Brady and Belichick, the fracture at the core of it all, and whether or not they're going to be able to withstand any sort of adversity. So I've said to you consistently all winter, it would not surprise me in the least bit if Brady and Belichick have gone to their last Super Bowl. Do I think they're going to suck? No, I don't think they're going to suck. They're too good to suck. But do I think that they are now clearly head and shoulders above the rest of the league? I do not.
So we've gotten to a place where we feel better about the Red Sox than the Patriots. Would you co-sign on that, Big Jim Murray,
in
our update studio?
Yeah, I did yesterday. Yeah, as you give us this Sophie's choice, I got to pick one of these two. I'm going with the Red Sox.
But you don't like either one still?
No, not really. I mean, look, with the way that the American League is playing out right now in terms of the playoff competition, I expect the Red Sox to get out of it or at least go deep into the ALCS. The Patriots? I don't expect them to get to the Super Bowl. They could probably, they're going to probably win a couple of rounds if they end up having to play on a wild card round, or they'll win the divisional game. But the AFC Championship game, I don't know if they're going to get out of that. They're just deeply flawed, especially at wide receiver. I don't expect that to get better, even if they pick up some bum off the street. And the palace queue continues. I think the coach and the quarterback essentially hate each other. And just look at how casual this whole camp has been. I'm not going to be surprised if there's another big injury because these guys have basically half-assed it, and that's on the coach, too. It just, the whole thing just feels off.
Okay, I agree. I got Red Sox in that question, as I said yesterday. But that's just sort of a jumping-off point for today, and we'll talk about both. We'll talk about the Red Sox and where they stand, and the Patriots going into tonight. We'll get through some final camp observations. The media portion of training camp, the first 2-3 weeks are over. Some guys reach some sort of conclusions at that point that I think are interesting and good jumping-off points that we'll get to. We're covering you up until 4:30 when the pregame starts with Beadle and Gasper, so give us a call, why don't you? 617-779-0985. Right to you after this.
Felger and Mazz, the Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Mazz
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
And a ground ball gobbled up by Cabrera. And that'll do it on the stretch. He held the bag. And the Phillies win this one by a final score of 7-4. So they split the series.
All right, welcome back to the program, Felger and Mazz. We got Murray and Mazz in our Town for Tire studios in Dorchester. I come to you from parts unknown, as we tend to do from time to time here in the summer. Again, 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll just start cranking through it. Red Sox and Patriots. Zach in Middleborough joins us first. You could pop him up, Billy. Zach in Middleborough joins us here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Hi, Zach. What do you got?
I called a few weeks ago saying how good of a job Alex Cora was doing managing the bullpen. He was pulling guys right when they look shaky, pitching the right guys at the right time. This week and last, I'm not so sure. He put in Hembree in a one-run game in the seventh inning. I think it was last week. Almost blew it. Game he had no business being in. And last night, you got a one-run game. Pomeranz comes out. First two guys, doesn't look good. And he doesn't have it. You pick up the phone right away. Pomeranz is not the type of guy. He's not Sailor Kimbrel, where he's just going to bounce back and start striking guys out. When a guy like that doesn't have it, he just doesn't have it. So you pick up the phone, you get somebody warming up, so at least you can limit that damage. And, I think you really blew that one there.
Okay, we'll let you go. And Maz, your thoughts on that? And just may I ask you in general.
Sure.
Do you think there's a thing where he's experimenting right now to see, certain guys in certain spots? I mean, that's what I think it was with Pomeranz last night. If he was going for the win last night like a playoff game, Pomeranz isn't in there in that spot, and he's not out there for as long as he's out there, right?
No, I think that's totally what he's doing, is he's putting guys out there because he's got to find out. And so, you know what? Look, it's one thing for you and I and Murray and whoever else to look at the Red Sox bullpen and say, geez, who are they going to go to in the eighth inning? The problem is Cora has the same issue. That's the problem. Cora doesn't know who to go in the eighth right now. Cora looks at it and say, where the hell, who's my guy? He doesn't know. There's no one he can trust. So last night was one 100% experimental. The manager told you as much. I mean, really, he did. It was like, you know, I got to get him in a spot like that and see what it looks like. And Hembree, I wouldn't rule out in the seventh inning. I think it's, this is the issue now, is that it puts a lot of pressure on Cora. He's looking at it going, who the hell do I go to here in this inning? Like, which one? Like, which one do I trust? Because he doesn't trust any of them.
As big of a concern now, too, is Kimbrel, I think, is creeping in there, Maz. And, you know, you were off yesterday. We talked a little bit about his leadoff walk the night before in Philadelphia. That leadoff walk, Maz, and we even threw up the pitch chart, you know, because it just struck me how all over the place Craig Kimbrel was on that first at-bat. And then I thought Philly totally let him off the hook by swinging at crap the rest of the inning. I mean, they had that base stolen a couple times, and they fouled it off, and they kept swinging it. I thought they totally let him off the hook.
Balls Kimbrel in the dirt. Still, yep, all of it.
Kimbrel still hasn't found the zone.
Agreed. Yes. And, you know, Kimbrel is starting to look to me like he looked 2 years ago. You remember his first year here with Farrell?
Sure.
He was kind of all
yanking
over the place. Totally. He just like winds up and throws it from his ass. He just totally winds up and whips it. Has no idea where the thing is going. That's what it feels like a little to me right now. Now, that said, if he goes belly up on him, they're screwed. Like, and I say belly up, meaning starts blowing games in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, no, they're porked.
Because they got nowhere else to go there unless it's Price or someone again. And like, in that case, you're going to need two guys in the bullpen. I if it gets to that point, they're absolutely porked. They
Ray
are.
Ray on the Cape has a Patriots thought for us. Ray, you're up next. What do you got? Hello, Raymond.
How you doing?
Good, what do you got?
I called up several weeks ago, and I want to give you I'm a legend in my own time. I said the Palace Q because I misspoke, and you guys continue to refer to it. Co, I want to thank you for the Palace Q.
Okay, you don't get ownership of that, pal. That's Matt in Framingham. But did you have another thought, or was that it? You just want to take credit for the Palace Q?
No. I want to say something about the Red Sox. Is it okay?
Go ahead.
I'm banking they win the World Series. I know Tony's right. They got a lot of short issues. But somehow, some way, these crazy fools find a way to win, whether the Yankees make an error. So I'm saying Red Sox World Series, not going to be easy, 7 games.
Okay, Ray, thank you. Here's what I've arrived with the Red Sox, Maz. The flaw in the bullpen or the starting pitching is what it is. But Houston wasn't perfect last year, and they had issues in the same spot you do, the bullpen. But they were playing so damn well that it didn't matter. And they got on such a roll and were so good at home at all those things. And I think the Red Sox can do the exact same thing. They can win in spite of that bullpen because they're just playing that well and they're on that big of a roll.
Well, and there are other teams out there that, you know, that also have flaws. So some of this stuff's going to bite those other teams in the ass. Look, I told you, my issue primarily with the Red Sox is the control of the relievers or the command. They all walk too many guys. The Yankees have largely the same issue. I mean, their relievers are all hard-throwing relievers that walk too many guys. They just have more of them. Robertson, to me, is a little bit more reliable, and even Betances, than what the Red Sox have. But could they win it? Of course they could. Absolutely they could.
You know, and just, again, on the Palace Q, that's copyright Matt in Framingham. Sorry, Cape guy. But you put it on, both you and Murray mentioned it, like on your list of, you know, things that concern you about the Patriots and will stop them from, you know, going all the way. It might. But, like, I didn't even mention it because I think it's so far down the, like, if Brady and Belichick figure it out and come together and are friendly with each other again, but no one can play left tackle, or they don't have any linebackers who can run, or even more importantly, Brady has nowhere to put the ball, like in 2006, then what does it matter? Like, that's it's a thing. I agree. It's real. It's just sort of down the list for me. There's a handful of things that they got to figure out first before we even get to the infighting behind the scenes.
So the issue for me is that if and when one of those other things goes wrong and undermines them, then all of a sudden the cracks between Bill and Tom will start to show. That's what I'm worried about. Again, to me, it's about sooner or later they're going to hit some bumps. I mean, they hit them in every season. They're going to hit some. They might not be as big as other years, or maybe they'll be bigger. I don't know. But when they do, I question their ability to withstand it the way I have in the past.
Let's grab Jerry on the Cape. He's got a thought on J.D. Martinez and his defense. I saw him make a nice running catch coming up on a ball late in that game. Was it last night or the night before? Jerry on the Cape, you're up next with Felger Maz. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering about J.D. Martinez on defense myself because he's, you know, just not physically capable of making big plays out there in the outfield. And why don't we just keep him as a designated hitter? Or is there stats to show that he plays, you know, hits better if he's playing on the outfield? I don't know. What do you think? Okay.
So Maz, I just saw one play from him come up on a shallow fly ball. Did he do something wrong last night out there?
No, look, I mean, not that I remember. There was one ball, I think, that fell in front of him a couple of nights ago. There was one ball up against the wall last night that he went back to get that I feel like he kind of misread a little bit, but the ball hit up on the wall. He wouldn't have been able to catch it anyway.
Right,
so,
right. That's the
keep
one.
Going, Maz.
Oh, he's in college still there. I didn't know where he was. Okay, yeah. So on that ball where he went up against the wall, it did. It hit up top. He wouldn't have made that play anyway. But I just think, you know, his numbers the last time I looked are better when he plays the outfield. So that part is true. And I think this is a way to pacify him. And maybe you don't get all the production if he's just DHing because he's pissed off. I don't know. But look, if they get to the World Series, he's got to play out there. You have no choice.
I am totally fine with J.D. Martinez playing the outfield if it means Jackie Bradley comes out. Totally fine with it. And that means that's how they get Moreland in the lineup. Or, you know, however that all shakes out, I am totally fine with that equation. If there's certain matchups where it makes sense to play Jackie Bradley, by all means. But I'm okay sacrificing Jackie Bradley's defense to get another bat in the lineup because I think Jackie Bradley's defense, as brilliant as it is, Maz, is overrated in terms of winning you games.
And it is overrated. And you know what? Again, they will tell you as much when the World Series comes around. They're not going to put J.D. Martinez on the bench of the World Series. Bradley's going to sit.
Right.
Because they're forced to make a decision then when they're in the National League ballparks, if they get there. Okay? And again, they did it in this series. Now, they sat bets, but J.D. Martinez played the outfield both games in this series. Now, and I did. I just called it up just to give you further indication. His batting average in left field, and it splits up left field, right field, and DH. Okay, but left field, .392 he's hitting when he plays left field. When he's playing right field, he hits .340, the DH, .305. So basically, split the difference, and I'll tell you that when he's playing the outfield, he's hitting .375 or .370. And the rest of the time, the rest of the time he's hitting .305.
Play him in the outfield, for the love of God. Here comes an update from Big Jim Murray, and we're back with more of your phone calls.
Headlines.
Preseason game number 2 for the Patriots on tap for tonight as the Patriots host the reigning Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles at Gillette Stadium. Mike Reese, ESPN Boston, reporting that the plan is for quarterback Tom Brady to play tonight, and it wouldn't be a surprise if Brady plays fairly deep into the first half. Now, for the Eagles, their quarterback, Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles, said he's ready to go after he missed Philadelphia's first preseason game with some neck soreness. Kickoff, 7:30. Catch the call of the game with Dan Roach and Matt Chatham right here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Elsewhere in the NFL today, wide receiver Dez Bryant met with the Cleveland Browns. And for the Red Sox, Wilson Ramos had three extra base hits and 3 RBI, helping the Phillies beat the Sox 7-4 last night in Philadelphia. Red Sox off this evening, but they begin a 7-game homestand tomorrow with the first of 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays. Rays in action against the Yankees currently, and the Yankees down 2-0 to Tampa in the bottom of the 4th inning. Headlines are brought to you by Deep Eddy Vodka. Just grab your friends, pour over ice, and splash in some soda. Deep Eddy Distilling Company in Austin, Texas. 40% alcohol by volume. Day drink responsibly. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 Sports Hub. Next update at 3 o'clock.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger, Maz. Maz, I know what the answer is to this question. I know you've read it because we've sent it around this morning. But I found Greg Bedard and Chris Price on Boston Sports Journal. They're sort of a training camp recap interesting.
Yes.
Just to go over, like, who's trending, who's not. And they gave out awards. Let me just read some of these, and then I want your impressions, okay?
Sure.
So, like, for example, best defensive rookie. And this is, you know, includes the first preseason game in the first 3 weeks of camp that the media is out for. The best defensive rookie, Bedard says Juwan Bentley, and Price said the same thing, I think. Again, not a whole lot of nominees, not like there was a lot to choose from, but Bedard writes, trending toward a starting spot over a Landon Roberts. Really came out of nowhere during the exhibition season. I think the coaches would say the same thing because he went from not being noticeable to being in the mix as a starter. So Juwan Bentley starting over a Landon Roberts. Is that a good or a bad thing?
I mean,
it's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
No, right.
If
they have an upgrade. Go ahead.
If they have someone better than Landon Roberts, that's what you're looking for.
Yes, yes. I'm saying, but it's also an indication of how bad they are at the position that a kid like this could come out of the woodwork and potentially threaten for a starting job. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where they come from. It's about getting good players on the field.
It's a sneaky, important guy. They have very few linebackers who can run, you know, in space. They've guys who can make, get up field if you want to consider the Rivers or the Wises and those guys linebackers. But in terms of coverage or just running in space, sideline to sideline, Murray, if this guy can do it, fine, great, that's a win.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's only one preseason game, but he seemed like he was pretty active both in the run and pass game. There was times where he was wearing the green dot late in the game, so they obviously believe in him. Look, he's a better option than a Landon Roberts. Someone should be pushing him because he stinks.
Okay. Best offensive rookie, Price said Isaiah Wynn. Bedard said, this is scary, Ryan Izzo. He says, Wynn is certainly the most talented rookie and has the best chance to stick. But he says, I think Izzo played the best of all the rookies with Webb, the running back, also close behind. Izzo sticking would not be a total shock. Solid hands and a good blocker. I take this as a bad sign. You draft two offensive players in the first round, and you come out of camp and you say the guy that looks the best right now is something named Ryan Izzo. Is that Larry's kid, by the way? I mean, I should know that.
It's got to be, I would think. That kind of name.
But like that, to me, I don't take as a good sign.
Oh, yeah, you know, because, you know, Bedard, the guy makes one seal block on Ralph Webb's touchdown run. And all of a sudden, seriously, like.
Oh, it's so true.
Bedard was running around like the press box naked when he saw that play, for crying out loud. Like, I can literally envision him running up and down the press box naked with his arms in the air going, did you see that seal block? Did you see that? Like, totally. To me, this is the fact that either one of them, even if it was Wynn, it should be Michelle. It should be a no-brainer, the fact that it's anybody but him. I mean, he's in the high-profile position. Like, all of it, the fact that it's anybody but him tells you how disappointing a camp, and obviously an injury element with him, too, but how much of a disappointment that has been thus far.
Well, let's get to that. Their biggest disappointment, both Price and Bedard say Sony Michel. Price says, we're not necessarily putting the blame on the rookie's performance. It's more a case of attendance. He certainly had plenty of good moments over the course of the spring and had a memorable catch and run early in camp, but his inability to get on the field after August 1 because of knee issues and an occasional underwhelming summer overall got us to this point. Bedard, little more pointed, says, like Chris, it's not all his fault. The Patriots knew about his knee, but with the way his camp was going, he was still going to be in this spot even before the injury. This was a major disappointment in this camp, so Michelle gets the nod. Over, again, the category's biggest disappointment. He gets it over Britt, Decker, Malcolm Brown, and Shaq Mason. So even before Michelle got hurt, this is where it was trending, and this is something, boy, you know, I mean, like, I don't want to play the I told you so game because it's not – he could come on and be great this year, and so I'm not saying this proves anything or settles anything. I'm not. But I still hate that pick. Let's just put it to you like that.
Well, and again, with good reason. Like, you get to this stage, and look, we're only judging it here. But he was putting the ball on the ground. Bedard's been all over him since the beginning of camp. You read some of the other people, right? And other people, there's a big screen pass player, and he broke a run early in camp. There was some flash. But as far as Bedard is concerned, he thinks this guy sucks.
Defend this pick, Murray. Defend it.
I can't right now. No, it doesn't look good. What else do you want me to say? It seems like he's trending the wrong way quickly.
And what's frustrating is, what's the Webb kid's first name?
Ralph. Spud.
The plumber.
They have a receiver named Paul Turner and a running back named Ralph. So the point is that this is the point that you're just as likely to get production at that position from some undrafted guy named Ralph as you are a number one pick out of Georgia from the national championship game. That is exact. Boy, if that doesn't encapsulate my feeling about that position in a nutshell, nothing else does. You're just as likely to get it free from something named Ralph as you are from Sony Michel.
And you know what? We wouldn't even be talking about Ralph Webb if it wasn't for that seal block by Izzo.
So it was really all one seal block that got Bedard going?
I think so. I mean, it's like, that's all I remember him doing. I don't remember anything else.
That's great. Has he caught a ball?
Yeah, I think he did have a reception in the last game, yeah.
He did? I don't remember.
I'll double check it, but I think he had one catch.
I was so delirious because I was losing all that money. I wasn't paying attention to specific players. But my God, you're right, though. Bedard likes his pad level. How about this? Most consistent player defense. Bedard said Lawrence Guy. This is another one. He loves Lawrence Guy.
Yeah. Again. Well, and just interrupt. I'm sorry. But you'll go through and you'll notice that in every one of the categories, Bedard picked a fat guy. He picked a fat lineman. He did every single time.
Who no one notices and would ever notice, even on your best day. Lawrence Guy, he's been here for over a year. I can't ever remember really seeing him. Like, I know he's out there all the time. But anyway, that was Bedard's most consistent player on the defense. Chris Price said this. Stephon Gilmore says there are a few guys on the defensive side of the ball who are more important, like Hightower, for example, but the corner was consistently the best and steadiest defensive presence for New England since the start of camp. He looks prime for a big year. I know, Maz, you have thoughts on Gilmore.
So, look, again, Gilmore played well at the end of last year, and I don't doubt that he got more comfortable as the year went along. I still question whether or not he can fit into, you know, more complex team combination coverages, all that sort of stuff. Because that's where the problems were last year, right? When they had to hand guys off and, you know, there'd be communication breakdowns. And ultimately, that's also where it was in the Super Bowl, even if it wasn't necessarily with him per se. Now, look, the other question I have, is it possible that he has looked good this camp because their receivers actually blow cheese?
It's a great point, Maz.
I mean, their receivers blow chunks. So, of course, he's going to look good. Who does he got to cover?
Ralph and Paul Turner. When you're covering guys like that, you're right. I mean, it's a fair point. Boy, I got to put Gilmore in the category of I feel good about that. Because if I don't feel good about Gilmore, then they're just hosed. They're just totally porked, right? Because the other side's a total question mark. The slot corner's a total question mark. And if you're telling me Gilmore's going to be a question mark again, and it's unknown whether they're going to get at the quarterback, well, then what are we doing? Like, you know, then they're just forget about it.
So, look, I'm not telling you he's at the top of my list, Mike, because he's not, obviously. He came on and played well at the end of last year. He did. I'm just telling you that I can still see him making a big mistake somewhere down the line.
Okay, Ryan Izzo is not related to Larry Izzo. Good. Don't you feel old, Maz, when you see, you know, Brady Tkachuk and Ryan Donato and all these guys?
Of course.
They're out there. Oh, my God.
Yes.
So I didn't need another log on that fire. We're going to get right back to your phones, Red Sox and Patriots, right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Pomerantz trying to make sure it's 4-3 when they come up to bat. On their first goes. There's a shot. Right in the alley again. Ramos strikes again out of the running track. Four is in to score. Here comes the second run. And it's another extra base hit for Wilson Ramos, who's been breaking the Red Sox backs all night.
It's definitely frustrating, and I definitely don't feel like the stuff that I have right now is the stuff that I've had the last 2 years, and that's, you know, at some point you just have to figure out a way to make it work and stop looking for, you know, what's going on this year and just make pitches, and that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Felger and Maz, we start with, starting and ending and doing all day on the Red Sox and the Patriots and your confidence level in each team. And it's gotten to the point where Maz, the foremost Red Sox doubter, now believes the Red Sox. He has more faith in the Red Sox and the Patriots to win a championship. How about that? More faith in the Red Sox and the Patriots. But Drew Pomerantz is not one of the reasons, Maz. That remains a guy that you have, no faith in, I would say.
That comment that he made last night, like, to me, post-game, he says, well, you know, I just don't feel like I have the same stuff I've had for the last 2 years. I hear that and I say, this guy's got no confidence either. It's gone. It's shot. Like, you know, he's had a terrible year. The last time I checked, his ERA was in the sixes. This is in the seven. Like, I don't even know where it is now. Whatever it is, it's terrible. And so I look at it and say, he doesn't believe he can get people out. Like, that is the last guy I want on the mound in any sort of spot. Look, give it a shot. I'm okay with that. I mean, they're 10 up, for crying out loud. There's, you know, 40-something games to go. Like, I'm not worried about that. I just don't think he's the answer. All right,
Sam, go ahead, please. You're up.
Go, Sam.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about how I feel like Xander Bogaerts is really underrated as a leader on this team. I mean, he's having a great year, 17 home runs, he's hitting .275, and he took that shot in the back last night, and he just took it, he stood up, he told the trainers not even to come out on the field, so I was just wondering what you guys thought about that. Thanks.
Okay, Maz, your thoughts.
So, look, I don't think Bogaerts is a leader. No, you want to say that maybe he's developed some toughness. He got hit in the hand, obviously, earlier in the half. So maybe he's just getting tired of getting hit and he doesn't want the trainers to baby him anymore. That part I'm fine with. But in terms of a leader, I don't think he's one of the leaders on the team. I think he's one of the guys that sort of just goes with the flow.
Peter in Wakefield will join us next. He's got a thought on the Red Sox postseason expectations. Peter in Wakefield, you're up with Felger and Maz. How you doing?
Hi, how you doing? Listen, let me ask you a question. I'm going to be frankly honest with you, right? The thing about the Red Sox, right? I've seen the Red Sox since, like, back in the days when you had the Curt Schilling and you had Roger Clemens those years when they went to the postseason and they consistently go to the postseason and they pitch for at least seven innings. They need Chris Sale to do that especially. Because if Chris Sale does not do that, pitch for at least seven innings, they are in trouble. Because I'm telling you this honestly, I'm being flat-out truth. The only way the Red Sox are going to win the World Series is they got to rely on the Red Sox offense. And believe me, the Red Sox have a powerful offense. Don't get me wrong. They are the top five as far as the offense. But as far as defense and everything, as far as pitching, they suck. Because the bullpen of committee sucks. You cannot rely on bullpen committee to be like if Chris Sale pitches for seven innings and he's got to lead 5-2. That means you bring in who? Matt Barnes? Who are you going to bring in? Who, you know?
Peter, thank you for the call.
Yeah,
Maz, I want to ask you, does Chris Sale have to be like that classic postseason workhorse, Baumgartner, Schilling, you know, those guys Schilling and Johnson that year with Arizona. I mean, you name it, where he's got to go on 3 days or pitch 7-8 innings or pitch in games five and then, you know, that does he got to be that sort of thing for this Red Sox team?
Well, I would say something close to it. And again, I'm not going to give you innings.
Do you think he can be?
Maybe, and I'll tell you why, because there's more off days in the postseason. If you dispose of people quickly, you know, they did this with Beckett back in 07, if you remember. They'd space him out, he'd hit the key spots, and they were able to give him basically 5 days before every start. So my short answer is something close to it they're going to need because I don't have faith in the other starters, and I don't, you know, believe in the bullpen. Now, does that mean 3 days rest? No. No, I'm not doing that. Not 3 days rest. But they're going to have to lean on him, and 7 innings? Yeah, that's a reasonable expectation for a guy like him. I don't think that's wrong.
Jim in the car has something for Big Jim Murray. Go ahead, Jim in the car. What do you got?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Well, just to start, I think the Red Sox are going to get swept in the first round of the playoffs, and I'll tell you why. Because Murray picked them to go deep. Murray, I love you. The porking of the ping pong balls and the Jets have signed Revis is some of your best work, but all of your sports takes are wrong. Super Bowl 51, wrong. 52, wrong. The AFC title game against Jacksonville, you thought it was going to be a walk to the Super Bowl?
No. I said be afraid of Jacksonville. I couldn't have been more right about that one. In fact, I'll pat myself on the back right now. You can see it on the simulcast.
I don't know. I called ahead of Super Bowl 51. I asked you and Matt, what happens if they go down 14 points to Atlanta? And you said, oh, no, can't do it. They won't come back from that. Matt, give you credit. You said they could. Now, you know when I knew they were going to lose 52? When you said they were going to win. I have more examples I could go on.
I'm sure you could,
that's
Jim.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Enjoy the night. Enjoy your weekend. Go ahead, Murray.
No, I'm mostly a mush. I mean, I'll tell you that right now. I've got like 5 things right since I've been on this show. And they're not even things you want to get right. Like,
no.
I think the Pats should go get Mike Gillisley. How's that worked out?
I still think you got at least a couple more right than me. I mean, my track record may be worse than you, but I did like his Murray voice.
Oh, well, they're going to just roll in the same title game. You think that guy has like a little Murray voodoo doll?
Yeah.
Tremendous. Brody is in Maine. Let's bring in Brody for a thought on Brady and the Patriots tonight, 7:30 here on 98.5 The Sports. Brody, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Mike, real quick. I got to tell you, please don't start taking advice from Marshall Hook, because if you start taking advice from a guy that, you know, used to be high on Jason Garrett and would rather watch a baseball game where 7 out of 9 guys stand around picking wedgies out their ass for 4 hours, then your show is going to suck. But with regard to the Pats, you know, tonight I'm specifically looking at Brady. I want to get your thoughts. But, you know, with him having a bad back and a little doughy in the middle coming into, you know, OTAs or whatever, I'm wondering if he did enough core work, and I'm wondering if the velocity is going to be the same on the ball this year. Thanks.
Brody, great call. Thank you for it. Just nailed it all the way around. Brady has nothing to gain tonight, Maz, because if he goes out and looks great like Brady, well, he's Brady. What do you expect? It's the preseason. What's the diff? He looks great. If he looks off, oh, brother, and I'm just talking about specifically me, you know, what I'm going to do. In my mind, he's got nothing to gain. And if he looks poor and the offense looks out of sync, it's, again, where were you in the spring? What kind of work did you put in? Slow start in the spring leads to a slow start in the summer, leads to a slow start in the exhibitions, leads to a slow start in the regular blah, blah, blah. So, I don't know. Unless you want me hear me, you know, yapping my gums on this, hopefully he goes out and has a good night.
So, I mean, when you're him, there's very little to gain ever in the preseason, right? But let me ask you this. What if he shows some ability to connect with, you know, one of the new guys? And when I say McCarron, sure, you know, Honey Nut Berrios, like whoever it is, right? What if there's actually some sign of chemistry and connection there that, ooh, you know what? This could work. Maybe it's Hollister. I don't know. I'm just throwing names out there. But it wouldn't kill me to see him develop some sort of confidence in a new receiver.
Okay. I want to see another guy that Bedard's been talking about. And Bedard hasn't just been taking off his shirt for this guy. He's been going full frontal for this one specific player who, I'll tell you, when you read some of Bedard's and listen to some of Bedard's stuff on this player, you got to wonder, man, what's going on there? So I want to get to that right after Murray's update. It takes 90 seconds. There are no commercials, so don't go anywhere.